This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
Oh, man, Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. Pete Carroll in a half hour, Brock. You ever apologize to your kids?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Is it hard?
No. Not really. I mean, when you screw up, you screw up.
I've been on a streak of apologizing to my kids.
Yeah, what's happening?
Like, twice in the last 3 days, I've had to have, like, very, like, yeah, dad screwed up.
Oh, really?
Moments.
Kind of lose your cool? Or?
Once I lost, actually twice.
That was shocking.
And then I've had to, like, apologize to my kids.
Oh, cool.
But Heather tells me that's good.
It is helping.
She says it's, like, really important to model that behavior.
It, like, humanizes you.
Right. Hey, dad screws up.
Like, I know dad's kind of this deity and, like, a Superman.
So last night, I'll tell you quickly.
Yeah.
I was Cecily was in bed, and she keeps coming out, and she, you know, this is what goes on with 4-year-olds. They keep coming out of bed, and you got to go back into bed, right? And she's like, "Dad, it is too dark in my room." And I go in there, I'm like, "Cecily, it's the same light it is every night. You've got these lights on. It's the same amount. Go back to bed."
Yeah.
She comes out a second time, third. Finally, I was like, "Cecily, go to bed. It's the same." She's crying and this and that. And Heather goes in there, and she's like, "Oh, what's wrong?" She's like, "Dad says it's not." And she's like, "Oh, well, you're missing this light, and let me go get it for you." She, like, brings in this other light.
Oh, I felt terrible.
Oh. And so Cecily's still crying, and Dad is mad at me, and this and that. So I go in there a couple minutes later. It's like, "Cecily, I am so sorry, and Dad was wrong. I screwed it. Did you know dads could make..." And she stops crying. She's like, "Thank you." And I said, "Did you know dads could make mistakes?" And she goes, "Yes, because you spilled the beer the other night." I was like... All right. So it turns out when we were at dinner on Saturday night, the kids were being a little rowdy. It was late, and they were playing.
Sounds like you were being
There was water and milk and all these things on the table. And after like 5 times of warning them, like, "Hey, don't spill that stuff. If you spill that stuff..." I finally got mad and was like, "Hey, if you spill that stuff, I'm going to be really mad. We've talked to you about it 4 or 5 times. You know, so I kind of had that moment. I swear to God, the food comes 5 minutes later. I knock my beer all over the table, just everywhere. It's on me. It's on Heather. It's on the floor. It's on my food. The woman is coming over with the paper towels to clean it all up. And I just felt like the biggest idiot in the world.
And did Avery and Cecily kind of look at you like...
They sure did.
Yep. It's like, "What's up?"
Dad screwed up.
Yep.
Yeah, sometimes even grown-ups make mistakes.
That's right.
The difference was I was just eating instead of clowning around, but sheesh, you couldn't have written it
can't
any
ever
better.
Win, Salky.
You can't just can't, win. Right? Nope. Is this like the... That's just, I guess, part of being a dad?
Yeah, I think so.
Ugh.
Yep, I don't think there's any question.
What a complete mess.
Yep.
What a complete and total mess. Anyway, just a brief aside. So hopefully those of you out there can find a way to apologize to your kids if you need to. I've now done it twice since Saturday.
Well, don't you think yesterday, in a way, kind of brings out those conversations? Well, not necessarily in an apologetic fashion, but certainly listening to our station yesterday, and I couldn't turn away from it at all for a couple hours. Danny, Dave, and Moore yesterday with the just incredibly sad and heartbreaking news that we lost in this city. Yes, an owner of the Seattle Seahawks, but I think infinitely more than that. And to just hear so many begin to talk about it and try to understand his reach and his impact, I think as much as he was celebrated in the 65 years he was here, I think there's going to be an incredible outpouring for decades to come, realizing the impact that he has had in the business world, in the sports world, in the community world, in the academic world, like it's in the technological world. It's phenomenal. And it's really hard to find someone like him. And it did bring me to 3 different moments, and I'll share these quickly, but in September of 1996, Damon was working for Mr. Allen. He was barnstorming the state, going to Rotary Clubs and working with Mike Flood, who still is here, and Bert Kolb and some of Paul's people to really kind of rally support for the partnership that Paul wanted. You know, and cut number one, ultimately why he bought the team. He wanted to partner with this community. It was important to him.
I wanted to be part of keeping the Seahawks in Seattle long-term. And what my hopes are for the team and this community, and what I see as the critical next steps in this process.
I got to be a part of that really early and sit in a suite with him and watch a game, a Packers-Seahawks game, on September 29th of 96 with Damon because of his relationship with all of those guys. And the two things that stood out that day are two that still stand out 22 years later, shy but strong. shy but strong. And that is almost an ethos of the Pacific Northwest in so many ways, isn't it? You know, not out front like Jerry Jones in Dallas, not bigger than life, not have to be in the headlines, shy but very strong. Another moment was January of 2012, and I get a chance to introduce Paul at the Sports Star of the Year Awards. And that day, you just felt a humble and humility and loyalty were probably the two things that jumped out that day. The exact opposite of Seattle's worst sports owner who sold his soul, he sold his legacy in Seattle. That being Howard Schultz. And I think the outpouring that we're going to feel for Mr. Allen is going to be yet again another reminder to Mr. Schultz, who wanted to be out front, who wanted to sit in the front row, who said it was about civic responsibility and civic opportunity, and then turned his back and sold out and sold his soul. And Paul never did that. And certainly felt some of that just humility and just class that night. And then lastly, watching this for the last 20 years, just being world class, empowering others to be their best. And isn't that what a great coach does? Isn't that what a great GM does? And ultimately, at the very top of the food chain, isn't that what a great owner does, is empowers everybody underneath them, as Pete Carroll said, clears the path for all of us to do our job at a very high level. That, to me, is what Paul
Allen's
about.
How do you think he got to that point? Do you think that's natural? Do you think that's just who he is? Or do you think it was learned along the way?
Oh, I think it's years and years and years of experience.
Because what's interesting about Paul is he made his money in an enormous fortune, right? $20 billion roughly when he passed away yesterday. But he was not, you know, he didn't have one business that he ran forever and ever. He was out of Microsoft in the early 1980s. I mean, this was not Bill Gates who ran Microsoft and built it up and did everything that Bill Gates did to make it the biggest company in the world as of a few years ago. This was not that. This was not Steve Jobs, the visionary. This is not, you know, what we've seen with Amazon and Jeff Bezos. He was not like that. He was integrally involved in the beginning and the shaping of Microsoft. And then he was more like Steve Wozniak. He's out. I didn't want to. He was not a part of it. He was sick. He bowed out. He kept his shares and he remained on the board of Microsoft. And because of that, he became an incredible billionaire. And then he went on to build plenty of other companies and do other things. But he did not just run one organization of great success his whole life.
And don't you think
I wonder where some of that came from.
And don't you think he learned? I know he did. He was so inquisitive and so curious.
Right.
So he learned in so many of these other avenues. I got a chance through Vulcan Real Estate when I was doing real estate. And it was right after they did Union Station and really built Union Station back up and then built, you know, their Vulcan headquarters right there by CenturyLink Field and had just the curiosity and the creativity and empowering people there. And, he's just an incredibly unique guy. And he will be one. And I think I say this very confidently. As much as he was celebrated while in action for 65 years, I think is going to be celebrated and remembered even more so.
I would agree with that.
For decades and decades to come when you look at his incredible reach and impact on the community.
Yeah, there's very few people who specifically impacted a community the way Paul Allen did. We'll look into some of that. Coming up next here on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
All right, 15 minutes away from Pete Carroll. Been looking forward to this for an extra day. Usually we do it the day after the game. But, of course, with a flight back from London, Pete Carroll a day late. So he will join us today at 9:30. And obviously a lot to talk about from the game on Sunday and a lot to say about it. Everything from the physicality of Frank Clark to his offensive line and his running game and his quarterback, etc. To, of course, the sad news here in Seattle yesterday that Paul Allen had passed away. I will admit, I never really thought about Paul Allen before I moved here, for sure. And I mentioned this earlier, Brock, when I first moved to Seattle, I don't think I would have known that Paul meant as much to this community as he did. I mean, when you think about Microsoft and Seattle and, you know, from an outside perspective, Bill Gates is probably the name that people identify most. And even now, if you were to ask people from far away, it's probably Jeff Bezos and Amazon and everything that Amazon now means to this community. And yet, he was Seattle's billionaire. He was the one who was so much more invested in what went on in this community. While Bill Gates works internationally very much with his charities and the Gates Foundation, and while Jeff Bezos is apparently trying to figure out what it is he wants to do in that realm, Paul was very community focused. focused here on Seattle. Not exclusively,
yeah.
But so much of what he did was about this community here.
Yeah, and to that city council that asked about the cultural relevance of sports.
Mm.
Right? Years and years ago when Howard sold out and sold his legacy and sold his connection to this community in that way. And that's what that Seattle city council, brought up and brought to light and even shared some of those opinions. What kind of cultural significance does sports really bring? I think, the outpouring certainly yesterday that you're going to hear and you're going to feel for days, for weeks, for months, for years as statues get built, as you start to look and really remember, wow, he did all of that. And he was a guy behind the scenes for so much of it. He didn't need the attention. He didn't need to sit in the front row. He didn't need to be at the owners' meetings. He didn't need ESPN. He didn't need any of that.
Didn't want it. Right.
Like some of those, I don't know, you've had this experience, I'm sure, Salk, and many of you listening, that, when you're around folks of real accomplishment and wealth, they seem to talk a whole lot less than those that, maybe try to pretend or want to be the new kid on the block and show it all off.
I mean, that's the idea of bourgeoisie, right? I mean, that's the whole idea of new money and bourgeois culture,
yep.
Is that, when you really have it, you don't need to talk about
that's
it.
That's exactly right.
You don't
right.
need to tell anybody about it. I found myself thinking a lot about him yesterday and listening to the afternoon show and people's stories and people crying on the phones and just sort of how important Paul Allen was. I got this text from Albert Breer, who's with Monday Morning Quarterback. We have him on the show sometimes, and he and I go back a long way, and he's just, hey, how do people out there feel about Paul Allen? And as I started texting him back, I was like, geez, really strongly. it's not something I thought about a lot, obviously.
And not something we expected at 65.
No, but when you start actually putting together the way people feel about him and his accomplishments here as an owner of the Seahawks, whom he saved, as a visionary for the city of Seattle, which he was as instrumental in the redesign of this city as anyone, with everything that's happened in South Lake Union, mm-hmm. and the growth of Amazon, and if you're, and for better or for worse, I understand, excuse me, a lot of people have been hurt by what's happened in Seattle, but if the price of your home has gone up by 50% to 75% in the last 10 years, Paul Allen is partly to thank for that. And yes, if you have been pushed out of the city and you can no longer afford to live where you want to live and you're not happy with the direction of Seattle, some of that is going to be on Paul's vision as well. He wanted a greater Seattle, not a lesser version. And so that's going to be an enormous part of his legacy. But I just keep coming back to that human element of it and who he was as a person, as a curious human, as a person that wanted to experience music and have other musicians, real famous musicians around him and play at his parties and the Mopop. And just he is somebody that acted as a billionaire the way I think a lot of us would like to.
Yeah. Yeah, was eccentric, was still who he was unbelievably private. But
not
just,
like Howard Hughes eccentric.
Yeah.
Not like in a, like, I mean, just eccentric in that, he had his interests,
yeah,
and he was passionate about
it. And then
them.
I guess, Mike, in our forum here, in this sports world that we talk about ownership, that you and I spend a lot of time talking about culture and team builds, and whether it's Chris Peterson in Washington, whether it's some of the Mariners and what they're trying to get right and in the direction they're trying to go, what he has done here. I also wonder aloud, what more could you possibly have wanted in an owner?
Mm.
Right, you want your franchise quarterback. You kind of know what those look like and feel like and play like. And you saw it again last night with Aaron Rodgers. And you saw it Sunday night with Tom Brady. You kind of know what that is. I think we got a pretty good feel for coaches. Right, and on that spectrum, from Pete Carroll to Bill Belichick, you could do it any number of different ways. But from an owner, yeah. What did you want in your owner?
The easy answer is there's nothing else you would want in an owner. He had more money than was needed to run the franchise, and he acted that way, even in a sport that has a salary cap. He spent in all the other places. As we sit here in the Seahawks facility today, this is a shining jewel of a building.
Yep.
And when you go to CenturyLink Field, it is a shining jewel of a building. Everything was done first class. Every single thing they did, from flying the team to the cafeteria to each moment in the practice facility here, everything is first class. And that's what you act that's what you want and ask of an owner.
So that's first and foremost.
That's
and then you'd
foremost.
Really hope it matters to him. you really hope, like, at the core of it, it matters to, and they've got the fabric of that area.
And that they would hold people accountable. He doesn't need to be making football decisions, but cut three, John Schneider, when he joined us after the Super Bowl loss a few years ago, made it very clear that Paul Allen is actively engaged in making sure that he is getting the most out of his team.
I think when you look at that whole game, you know, I do a deal for Mr. Allen every week where I do an evaluation of the game, every player, and what the game looked like in particular. And this one is tough because, you know, everybody's focused on this last play. And, you know, my job is to kind of step back and analyze the whole game. And when you look at the whole game, you got some shuffling on defense. You know, we had 11 missed tackles. We gave up 196 yards after the catch. It's the most we gave up all season.
It's not on an owner to make football decisions. It is on an owner to hold everybody accountable and get the most out of that team.
Man, and when that owner is deeply inquisitive, when he is really curious, when he wants to build tanks back and warplanes and have an amazing museum, when he wants to bring in the world-renowned architect and build a music museum, when he has so much fascination and so much curiosity.
And when he approaches everything from the standpoint of what we're about the fans here. He got into owning the Seahawks not because he loved football specifically, but because he wanted to do it for the community.
Yeah.
And when you approach everything from that standpoint, it's a heck of a way to run a team, and it was awfully, awfully successful. All right, Pete Carroll is going to join us, a man who's had a lot of success on his own. We'll talk to him about Mr. Allen, about his Seahawks. We'll do it all next. I'm Brock and Salk. Pete Carroll Show coming up here in just a couple minutes. Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN Seattle. Today was supposed to be a day to talk about Pete, and that was sort of our plan for the day, and discuss kind of where the team is at and where he's at. Maybe we'll do some of that tomorrow, Brock, obviously. The sad news coming out yesterday about Paul Allen, his passing, ended up waylaying some of that. And there is still a big picture conversation about just how wrong a lot of people were this offseason about Pete and his future in Seattle and all this, that, and the other. And I just thought it was nuts then, and I think it's even more crazy as you look back on it now, given this team at 3-3 and really recapturing a lot of the identity that we talked about, them wanting to recapture. I'll tell you what, they sure had it in London. We'll ask Coach about it here in just a minute.
Stay with these guys now. Coach them up. Keep them going.
The Pete Carroll Show. The first word from the Seahawks head coach every Monday at 9:30 with Brock and Salk.
That's exactly what you want.
Presented by Banner Bank, VenueKings.com, and Les Schwab Tires on 710 ESPN Seattle.
All right, the Pete Carroll Show. Good morning, Coach. How are you?
Good morning. Good. Good.
Well,
under the circumstances, very solemn morning, you know, coming in.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about the game here in a few minutes, but we did want to start with the sad news that came out yesterday as Paul Allen passed away. How'd you feel? How do you feel about it?
Well, it's a shock of enormous proportion. You know, we knew that Paul was sick, but he has always battled and been so gritty about getting back. His attitude when I last talked to him was, you know, well, here we go. We're going to go after it again. I got the right doctors, and we're going to get this thing knocked out again. And just the same spirit that he always had about just moving forward and always keeping moving. And you know, like, he was bigger than life. There wasn't anything he couldn't do. So it was a big shock. I can sense, you know, around us and around what we're hearing, you know, from around the community, everybody is really taking this to heart because he was such an extraordinary person and had such extraordinary impact on so many.
What was your relationship like with him?
We had a really good relationship. You know, he really was kind of John and I and Paul really had a way that we communicated and functioned that was extremely facilitated what we're after. I mean, he's a competitor, you know, and he wanted to do great things, and he always was challenging us to try to figure out where could we go and what could we do to do things better, and with always the support. You always felt him, you know. It's why I got here. You know, I would never have left USC in a million years, but it was because of his spirit, what he wanted to create and how he wanted to go about it that made it so obvious. And then he only impressed me more as we went through the the years, you know, doing this, and that he has such great resolve for what he wanted and how he wanted to do great things, and he wanted to give so much back to everybody around here. We needed to come through, you know, for everyone, and all of these amazing choices that I'm sure you guys are chronicling that he stood for, and all of the accomplishments, the challenges, the discoveries, the science, everything that he went after, just showed his spirit, this extraordinary spirit to do great things, He realized his situation. He realized where he was and in this place and time, and he went for it. And he always demonstrated that to us and always gave us that feeling. And we were always trying to do everything we could to be better than anybody's ever done it.
You know, we heard some unique stories from the Liwikis in pursuing you and making sure that, you know, you had the opportunity and Paul had the opportunity to get you here and how badly he wanted you here. Do you remember your first interaction actually with Paul?
Yeah, I think it got all the way to the point where, you know, we're going to do the job, you know, and he had sent Todd out to come find, you know, the pathways to, could we do something, you know, and Todd represented precisely the spirit that I needed to hear to want to ever leave what I was doing down there. And it was about the future, and it was about the challenge, and it was about clearing the path for, you know, for success and giving you every chance. And with this, what Todd was able to convey to me, that Paul trusted that I would be the right guy to do this, and he was going to back me up to go get it done. And I didn't believe other owners when I had heard them, you know, in other opportunities and stuff. And this was one that Todd was able to convey what Paul stood for. So when we talked, it was just like, okay, here we're already going. And we were talking about the general manager then and how we're going to do that and how that next step would be. And everything was just supportive. So I remember being very positive and very supportive to the point where I was overwhelmed and ready to do it.
What'd you learn from him?
I think the benevolence, you know, that he was willing to chase, you know, to do great things anywhere he needed to go, whether he was going to Africa or the bottom of the oceans or the space. I mean, where else can you go? On the planet, off the planet, under the planet, you know, he would, and not just that, but also the science spirit that he had, you know, about working with the brain and the institute that he developed and all of the thoughts. He just wanted to do extraordinary things. I mean, I couldn't love being around somebody more than that. I mean, it was easy to champion whatever he was after.
Do you have any idea when the news hit yesterday that it was coming? Any you know, I pulled the car over.
There had been some indications, you know, and some things said. The things he said and the way he, you know, he was feeling was he was battling, and I sensed that he was going into battle again, but I was really worried about it. Just because I know he looked ill and he was feeling down, and he was having trouble doing the normal things that he likes to do, and he was competing to try to stay with us, but yet he couldn't. So there were some indications that it was dire.
You know, we hear from a football perspective that he just let the football people do the football things, and yet we also know he was deeply curious and he just loved to learn about it as well. From your perspective, your relationship, how did he kind of navigate that?
Yeah, you guys are on it. I mean, he was a hands-off guy in the sense, in the classic way you would think of owners that are, you know, involved. But he was tuned in, and he loved to know what was going on. He loved the information. He was a problem solver, you know, and he was a guy. He said it one time to John, you know, I'm a solutions guy. You know, I need problems to solve, you know, and that's so he would look for ways. He would look to try to find the things that maybe we hadn't seen yet, and so he would challenge us with it. But he was always supportive. I mean, John did an extraordinary job running this whole thing, really with the guidance and the support of Paul, but really not the day-to-day guidance at all. He was not here in the building. He was very shy and wasn't, you know, really comfortable being around the team so much. You know, he just liked to win. He wanted to win and win big, you know, and if you weren't, you know, how could you get there? But he was a wonderful owner to work with because of the way he allowed us to do our job. That's why I came here, and he never backed off that. He never, ever influenced another thought other than he was in full support of what we were doing.
He also seemed like he was a first-class guy. Everything in this facility, everything around this organization since he took over has been first-class. That seems to be more and more the norm in the NFL now, but I know it wasn't always that way.
Well, there's more to it than just the building. You know, it's the spirit that you bring with you and how you're willing to support and look for ways to do the right thing for people. You know, you hear us talk so much about how we want to treat our people around here. Well, we were supported to do that, and we were able to do it, and we were cutting edge. We were able to continue to try, we continue to try to pioneer ways to find how we can support and help the performance and the life of the people that we're dealing with, and he was totally in support of all of that.
I love the line that we played. It was, I think, from an interview you did a year ago where you said, he swept the path. He just swept the path for the rest of us.
Yeah.
Did you feel some of that in this trip to London? I mean, in some ways, wasn't this just last trip so fitting in that way?
This was an extraordinary illustration of Seahawks. I mean, it was from every aspect of it, from the organizational preparation, the plan, getting out ahead of everything so that everything was so beautifully smooth. But it wasn't just that. It was then when the execution of it, when we got there from the trainers and the equipment people and the support people and administration, all that. But then for somehow, where did the fans come from? We had fans everywhere. It was like they supplanted the 12s. You know, we had people everywhere we went, anywhere in town that you drove in the buses or wherever we went. There was people everywhere. And then we got to the stadium, and the stadium was crazy. It was a home game. It was not kind of a home game. It was a home game. When the guys, the first group comes out on the field, the kickers come out, they're cheering for Seabass and Mike Dixon, you know, Dixon coming out on the field right there entirely. You know, what's going on with this, you know? And it just carried on throughout, and then the game followed through, and then the trip coming home, and then every single aspect. This is one of my most favorite experiences I've ever had with the team and traveling. I mean, I'm talking about Rose Bowls and Orange Bowls and everything you can think of, the best of the best. This was just as top door as you can get. And the players played like it and acted like it throughout the whole thing. So it was an amazing trip.
I heard you say afterwards that it was sort of a balance of fun and a business trip, that you wanted the guys to go out there and see sights, but not too many sights, and then come prepared. What is that balance? How do you figure out the right way to let these guys experience? I mean, I heard Jacob Martin say he'd never been out of the country before, and I'm sure he wasn't the only one on the team.
Quite a few guys, yeah.
And yet... And you want them to experience that, but yet you also need them to get ready for a football game, which they sure did.
Yeah, primarily we have to stay in connection with what it takes to perform really well. And so that's, you know, we govern them pretty strictly in that regard, and we were strict about their time frames and where they traveled and all of that. But I want them to have freedoms. I want them to go out there and exercise their own ability to make decisions and choices and do the right thing. But keep in mind all the time that they're a Seahawk and they represent all of us. Well, even in, you know, this... We built the case. There were some things to look out for, you know, and some places you don't want to go and some people you want to steer clear of and situations and all that. Our guys just did it all. They got to go to downtown. And most of the guys went to London, got on the buses and had fun, saw some sights. And that I want them to have an experience that they take with them where we show that we trust them, too. That we work really hard, we have great care in what we're doing, but that we trust the fact that they can carry out their part of it. That's when you get the most out of it. And when you don't trust them and you restrict them so much, you're not gaining much there. But these guys gained our belief in them, and they pulled it off, and they did a great job. Couldn't have done better.
You know, it's interesting, Pete, as you're talking there and talking about the stadium and that city and just the international appeal of this brand. And Paul was so unique. You said it earlier. He was shy. You know, I've around him, I don't know, a dozen times in my life, maybe. And he was always pretty reserved and shy, especially for a billionaire, about as shy as you're going to get. And yet his brand, this brand, exploded under his ownership.
Yeah, this is a fantastic franchise. I mean, why would they like us? I don't know. The people from Germany came flooding in, you know. You know, there were people from everywhere. There were different countries that came in factions, not just, you know, onesies, twosies, in factions to come see us.
So if you were to answer that, why? Why do you think that impact?
I think that in the last 6 or 8 years, you know, we've won some championships. We've been on top of it. We've had a lot of success. We've had a high-profile football team and players and organization and wins and all that kind of stuff. And they've latched onto it. They like it. And the colors are cool. The uniforms are nice. You know, we're coming from this, where the heck are we up there in the Northwest? You know, there's something about it that we may even, because we're so separate from all of the other teams, maybe they see us, you know, more uniquely like themselves.
Did he play a role in empowering some of the individuals? Because you said it, you know, and the characters, and Marshawn, and Richard, and Russ, and all the characters, and just the empowerment of those. Did he play a pretty active role?
He did, because he allowed me to play a role in that. He was a very free-spirited person, you know. He loved the arts, he loved music, he loved to be around all of that atmosphere and all. And from the Northwest, he had a sense for openness and a liberal way of looking at things that supported where I was trying to go, and it made it so fun to be able to create, you know, a mentality that was connected to him, and we were connected. He liked the stuff. He never had any trouble with the flare ups of the issues and all. He I don't know that he chuckled about it, but he knew that there was space in the world for people to be unique and different, and just like he was, and with the people that he hangs with, and the friends that, you know, that he's built around his life, there was a blend, and it did fit together.
I don't know whether the Europeans that came because they liked physical football, but if they did, they must have sure liked what they saw from your team on Sunday.
It was a good, hard time.
How physical was your team on Sunday?
We were after it from the word go. I love the way the format went, because we were ready to play. We were physically and mentally ready to play. We were alert and ready. There was no aftermath from the trip at all. Our guys did a great job of orchestrating that. And by the time we get to game time, it was a championship game. It was exactly the way we want to tell you that we're trying to create the atmosphere. It's a championship opportunity. It felt like it. Russ must have said three or four different times, this feels like the Super Bowl. It just felt like that. It felt that electric. And that's coming out of the locker room and getting on the bus with the guys and feeling their energy and their excitement about it and all of the buildup around it, too. It really felt special. We knocked the heck out of him, man. But it was pretty cool, because 24 was coming back at us, man. He was trying to. He played his tail off, you know. I loved the way he played in that game. And our guys pounded him, and he pounded us. It was a duke out, you know. It's really fun.
Can you help me understand, the last four games, you guys have run the ball really well, physically, powerfully, over 100 yards in each of those games. Why so well in the last four games and so much of a struggle the first two and even the last couple of years before
we
that?
Really,
what's
just
different?
It just took us the proper mix in our focus. We wanted to do a little bit of everything because we could, and we needed to do the fundamental basics and get back, right back to running the football first and foremost, and then build from there. We even in our plans over these 4 weeks have adapted to make sure, to ensure that we did that transition. I just feel terrible that we didn't do it the first 2 weeks, because we'd have won both those games.
But even though really,
not anything about their teams, we could have played the winning style and we could have created a win for ourselves, because they were close anyway. And we were lousy. We played lousy the first 2 weeks.
What are you doing now? What makes the running game go? Is it just that concentration?
It's the commitment to it. It's the commitment to doing it and organizing the plans and calling the plays and being willing to play that way. We've had a great boost from Flew coming back in and Sweeze going to left guard. That worked out really well. And the running backs have been waiting, and Russ has been waiting. Everybody's been waiting. We just had to put it together just right. And probably I didn't do a good enough job focusing us in on really the essence of it. We're trying to do a little bit too much. And I tell you, time and time again in performance, if you try to do too much, you usually don't get anything done. And it's we have to stay focused and stay true to who we are and what we are. Well, we're figuring that out now. We haven't done anything yet, but we're getting going, and we can feel it. We know what it takes, and we know how to go about it, and we can't wait to get going again. I know these guys all went on a break, but I'll promise you, these guys will be excited as hell to come on back and get going again, because they know that something's happening. They're having a blast doing it.
Do those guys know they're doing it differently than a lot of the rest of the league? That when you watch Sunday night and it's 47-40, and you watch Monday night and it's, you know, 400 yards throwing, and it's a, do they feel that, man, we're doing it a little bit differently?
Yeah, and there's enough big guys that like the way that is, that's holding up just fine. Those guys up front are having a ball, you know, and they really are a big factor in all that, both on both sides of the football. The defensive linemen, they love the way the offensive line are playing. They love the way this is going, and of course, the running back. So there's always going to be some receivers that want to get the football a little bit more, and the quarterback wants to throw a little bit more. That's always the case, and we want to do it too. What I want to do is explode more and get more big plays and bust down the field. We just missed a couple.
Did you mention DJ Fluker? Did you hear Mike Davis talking about Fluker? Is good. Here, Kyle, play me Mike. This is Mike Davis discussing the juice that DJ Fluker brings.
Fluker, man, he brings the juice. If anybody asks you anything about Fluker, they'll tell you he brings the juice. And he's always hype. He's always live. And man, he does a great job firing our guys up. So that's just him.
I think everybody's just sort of fascinated by DJ Fluker, and I don't mean to take credit away from the whole O-line.
I am
but
too.
I can't stop watching him. He's so big. He's so punishing out on the field. What has he done for the personality of that offensive line?
He's just added a tremendous amount, and it's just being who he is. He's a right from the heart guy. He loves to play. He loves to practice. He wants to be jacked up. And it doesn't matter where it is, what we're doing, you could catch him in a dining hall, and he'll high-five you by knock you over. You know, I mean, he's amazing. He's an amazing spirit, and we're just having a blast with him part of this whole thing.
Good time for the bye?
Yeah, that's always okay. You know, we'll take it when we can. I mean, let's say it this way. Fortunately, we can have a chance to, you know, just do everything we need to do to help out in the situation that is taking place and bring it back to that. But, I mean, it will give us a time to respect it, I guess.
What got into Frank Clark on Sunday?
Well, he took advantage of some young guys up there, man. He was wearing them out. Unfortunately, Frank got sick during the game, or he would have, I don't know what he would have done, but he was tearing them up. Getting off the football really aggressively, just on the attack, and just took it to him. Had some tremendous up and inside rushes, and they couldn't slow him down.
Is there a term? I know the pancake is when an offensive lineman puts a defensive lineman on his back. What is it called when a defensive end takes a left tackle and fully runs him over onto his back? Is there a name for that?
Nah, sometimes you roll him up like a donut, you know?
Like a donut.
But no, they don't say that. That's the old saying. But I don't know. We're lucky that we were fortunate to, you know, get off the ball like we were. It was good.
Yeah, I mean, both sides of that line of scrimmage, was that as physically a dominant effort as you've seen since?
No, I think it was a good complete game. I don't think it was anything off the charts. I think it was a really good complete game that in all aspects of it, you know, came together well.
I challenge that a little bit, because you come out with a 7.5-minute touchdown drive.
We did score the first drive.
You scored on the first drive.
That's been a couple of years.
And then there's something called a 4-minute drill, but that was an 8-minute drill.
Yeah, that was really
You start
sweet.
The game with a 7.5-minute drive, 7 straight runs. You end the game, I think, with 8 straight runs and an 8-minute drill. That doesn't happen very
often.
Yeah,
we took the field with the guys. They knew that there was an opportunity to run a bunch of clock here. I don't think we thought we'd go 8 minutes, and we were still about the 35-yard line. It just took forever, which was great.
What was that stadium environment like? What was Wembley like?
Wembley was great. They were the people outside. You saw a lot of a variety of NFL jerseys. You know, you didn't see it just all Seahawks, but there was a bunch of Seahawks people there. As we got to take in the field, they were responding to everything, and it was like at home where we have the people hanging around the, you know, with the entrances and stuff like that, and the exits and all. We were signing autographs and having fun with them, and then it just started to grow and grow. But when I really sensed what was going on is when our guys took the field and they exploded, and there, you know, the crowd wasn't all there yet, and then the Raiders came out and they booed them, and so maybe this is going to go like this, you know, and it just built and they just overwhelmed anybody other than Seahawk fans. I don't know if they all became Seahawk fans, or they did. I don't know. It's like they had a pact or something. I don't know what they decided to root for us, but it was great.
How about this new secondary? I mean, the whole idea of the Legion of Boom, and for years we watched this group of three core guys and a few other people on the periphery of it, and all of a sudden none of them are playing right now, and this new group really seems to be creating its own personality.
It's a good group. Yeah, it's a really exciting group. They're having a really good charge here to start this season about gaining their respect for one another and the way they play and the style of play. The consistency has been pretty good right so far. I think we've got some big tests coming up. You know, with Detroit, you know, they're going to be a terrific throwing team. We'll see how we do against those guys. But all in all, they're playing really physically, and they're knocking the heck out of people, and they're making the plays that we need to make, and everybody's contributing. So it's a good group right now.
Brock and I have talked a lot on this show about leadership on this team over the course of the last 8 or 9 years, going all the way back from when Matt Hasselbeck moved on and sort of creating a void to allow some of the next generation of leaders to fill his spot. From our perspective, it seems like that's happening again this year as some of the veterans are out. And, you know, I know some of the names we think are stepping up into that void as leaders. Who are some of the guys, and especially the young guys, you see stepping up into that?
Well, first, I think you're right. You know, I think there has been a transition that started, like I've said to you, last year during the season. You know, as guys were leaving, guys were coming in and starting to, you know, figure out where they fit. I think Bradley McDougal has had a big impact. You know, Bobby's always been the guy, and he's been a fantastic leader. And on any team he ever went to, he would be the leader. Kind of like Kenny Norton was the leader any team he went to. Well, that's how Bobby would be. And so I don't want to overlook the fact of how steady he's been. But Bradley has really been a factor. And Jaron Reed is really a guy. He's a real deal. They love him. And, you know, he was like that at Alabama. And we heard that a lot when we were in the process of drafting him. And he is the real deal. He's just one of those heart soul dudes, just like Fluke is on the other side, you know. And Russell is always at the heartbeat of what's going on because he's in the center of everything. And he's got a good voice. He represents so well. Doug is as studly as you could want a guy to be. Now that he's emerging back in, you know, and getting back going again, he'll just be a bigger impact and a bigger factor. Dwayne Brown is a great guy. I mean, you can't find a guy you'd want more to be in front calling the shots or calling you out when you need to. We got all we need. You know, seriously, I mean, there's other guys, there's tons of guys. Wait till KJ gets back in with us too, you know. But we've got a great group. You're going to see Shaquille too. Shaquille has really come on. Such a good worker. Makes so much sense about how he applies himself and all that. Having the impact with his brother as well as part of it. But just Shaq in his own right is a guy that's really emerging. And he's going to affect everything that's going to go on with Trey and the other side. So it goes on and on. I can't stop talking about him. I mean, watch Tedrick Thompson too as he emerges. You know, wonderful competitor. You know, so
I kind of like this team more than I have the last few years. Is that okay?
No,
I just like that. There's new stories and new guys. New and fresh.
I like it too. I can really feel it. I was talking to Rabel the other day at the stadium, I guess, and he said he senses it in me. You know, that he said, "Geez, you're all fired up." Well, yeah, I am. It's just because of who they are and the way they're going about it, and you can see the future. You know, we've done this before, you know, and these guys are going to take us a long ways.
Hey, last to turn this all the way back to where we started and the void, I think we'll all feel. And it started yesterday with the loss of Paul and just the opportunity to fill it with this team, the opportunity that you guys have now to rally. Do you rally? How do you when this team comes back together, because you're on the bye week now and they come back together and they gather next week, there's going to be a void at the guy at the very top.
I hope we're fortunate enough as a club and a team to extend the spirit that Paul stood for. And we have this extraordinary opportunity to reach out to the 12s and the people in this area represent this marvelous, iconic guy that he will always be in this community. He loved this area so much. He was of the area. He was the fans. And he never wanted to miss that chance in expressing that. He would never want us to be anything other than that. If we can just, you know, be a conduit to that connection and keep that spirit flying and just fire it up the way that you know he has always wanted it to be, it's worth it. And we're very, I feel so fortunate that we have the chance to extend that spirit onto our fans and the people around her.
Coach, thank you. Thank you for spending the time with us today. Our condolences to you and to the entire organization.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
It's a rough day, but I think you speak very well on the future of the Seahawks.
Thanks for carrying the message
to
everybody. Everybody needs this right now a little bit.
There you go. All right, that's the Coach Carroll Show. We do that, of course, usually on Monday, a rare Tuesday edition. We'll be back tomorrow to talk a lot about that, the future of this organization, and a whole lot more. We'll see you tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Till then, hey.
He's in a barn.
See you, everybody.
Get to the chopper!